It's time for the Picture House Podcast with your hosts, Sam and Simon. Please ensure that your mobile phone is switched off, refrain from smoking, and keep conversation to a minimum. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show!
Hello and welcome to the Picture House Podcast. My name is Simon Renshaw and I'm joined, as ever, by Sam Clements. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
Good to be in the same room with you.
Yes, it's very good to be in the same room with you. I've been away.
You've been away. Long and sunny holiday.
I was on a very long and sunny adventure to Thailand, which was excellent. I also went to France for a little bit as well, but Thailand was the big one. Do you want to know what I watched on the plane?
Always.
Outbound, Magnificent Seven, Morgan, Trolls, Jason Bourne, 7 Minutes of War Dogs, The Accountant, Return, The Notebook, Bride Wars, The Fault in Our Stars, 21 Minutes of Dark Shadows, The Other Woman, The Bodyguard, A Christmas Story.
I mean, that's an incredible film festival you've had on the plane.
Yeah, it's fun to program a little film festival for yourself on two 12-hour journeys.
I quite like the 7 minutes and the 21 minutes off.
Yeah, War Dogs was, Morbid Curiosity.
Yeah.
And Dark Shadows.
You didn't stay for the Tim Burton. Couldn't hack it.
I was very tired at that point. I'd been up for like 30 hours at that point, and I was just like, I can't hack this right now. I need to watch The Bodyguard.
Fair enough. It's good. It's nice to have a reassuring thing. Last flight I went on, we went through some particularly bad turbulence. I put on Disney's Tarzan.
Lovely.
It was so nice. I hadn't seen it before. Yeah. It's actually really good.
Yeah, it is a good film.
But it was great, and also just got me through the turbulence.
Yeah.
So I can't watch whatever I was watching. I had to turn it off. I put on something nice.
Yeah, you're probably watching Total Recall.
Did you go to the cinema whilst on your holiday?
I did go to the cinema while I was on my holiday, Sam. On my last night in Bangkok, I thought, I haven't seen a single cinema here or anywhere in Thailand, and I must look them up. So I looked them up, and I noticed that in one of the biggest cinemas in Thailand, there's a 4DX screen.
Okay.
Now, you'll be aware of 4DX. They're those cinemas that... those screens that chuck you around in a chair.
So the film is in 3D.
The film is in 3D, but then the experience... is very much four dimensions. In fact, let me just find the list of everything that it does to you. So you're sitting in your cinema seat watching a 3D film, but you also experience wind, bubbles, lightning, fog, scent, vibration, air, water, motion, ticklers.
Wow.
I think the ticklers are the worst bit.
Did they tickle you? What's the sensation?
So it's rubbish actually. Your feet are sort of locked into a little plinth thing, and at the back of your calves, there's sort of like a 10-centimeter little bit of plastic tubing that's sort of hanging limp in front of you. And every now and then, it sort of whips around like a little helicopter and sort of brushes against the back of your thighs. That's the tickler.
Wow. At what point in the film is that appropriate?
I watched Guardians, which is this new... Russian blockbuster.
The one that all the kids are talking about.
It's got an amazing trailer that we watched a few months ago, I think, and I've been looking forward to ever since. I don't know if it has a UK release date or even a distributor here.
Well, maybe after this review.
But I'd noticed that it had been released in Thailand a couple of days before, and I was like, I've got to go and see that. So the tickler is used quite often when like a character's running really fast somewhere.
Because that's what it feels like to run.
Yeah. You know when you're running along and you get that sort of tickly feeling in the back of your calves. That's what they do. It's a really sophisticated bit of equipment though. So if there's like a big explosion, which happens frequently in Guardians, there are two little holes behind the back of your head in your chair, and like wind will sort of go out of those, like either side of your head, in time with the explosion. So the whole thing is timed to perfection.
Okay.
So, but the seats of the rows of four are all built together, so each row of four moves in sync with each other. And it's just getting beaten up by a chair for 90 minutes. But every camera tilt, every strafe, every pan is like built. You're moving the whole time. And then you've got all these other things that are just beating you up. But like, yeah, if there's an explosion, there's loads of dry ice and you know, theatrical smoke that will come out in time with the explosion. But obviously in a film, you'll just cut to something else after that. Yeah. You'll cut away from the explosion. Yeah. So I initially thought, well, it's going to take 15 minutes for the dry ice to clear. But then at the top of the room, there are very discreet, very powerful, very quiet fans that just suck up the dry ice really quickly so it's gone and ready for the next explosion.
That's amazing.
It was really impressive. The film was dreadful. You should watch the trailer, though. If you look up like Guardians 2017 trailer, you can see it's like the Avengers, but a Russian version. It's a really bad film, but it does feature a man bear holding a Gatling gun, just sort of gunning down.
Sounds delightful. Well, we'll put the trailer up for the podcast and people can enjoy that.
It's an astonishing feat.
I have to see a film in 4DX. Sadly, no picture cinemas have 4DX.
It's a shame.
But there are cinema chains in the UK that do, so if you fancy maybe a jumbo mega blockbuster. There was a while where it was only, weirdly, the Cineworld in Milton Keynes.
Right.
But now it's gone beyond Milton
There's
Keynes.
There's a few. Yeah.
Milton Keynes was the test area.
I tell you what was genuinely impressive, very quickly, there was ads and trailers beforehand. There was a perfume advert where you just got covered in the perfume. That was horrible. That was really horrible. But after that, there was a 4DX trailer for Beauty and the Beast.
Ooh.
And that was really good. I mean, it's a trailer that's, you know, that's cut together with 4DX stuff. So it's even more intense because, you know, a trailer, as we all know, is just bam, 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 bam. So, which is even more full-on than any, you know, action sequence or fight sequence in a regular film. So there's lots going on, but all sorts of, like, growly beast things and being thrown about the place and spooky castle and, yeah, wind, all sorts of stuff. The beast's breath on the back of your neck. Yeah, I had
what a
great
relaxing thing to do at the cinema.
Yeah, had a great filmy holiday. Imagine, I mean, you'd never be able to fall asleep under those circumstances. You're just getting pounded.
Do you have, like say, if you're on a flight and then you stand up for the first time and actually, because you've done, like, the pressure changes and stuff, your legs are kind of weak. Like, does it feel like you've just run a marathon or something?
It does,
sitting on this chair.
It's really full on. I was exhausted. I went to the cinema at 10 o'clock and the film started about 40 minutes of ads and trailers.
Wow.
It started at 10:40 and I got out, you know, just after midnight, and I was exhausted. It's brilliant. Give it a go.
Okay, well, that's a great recommendation for the film that's not released in the UK.
Yep, sorry about that.
And a many picture houses is everything you could need. Friendly ushers and organic snacks, it's a very fine place indeed. Range of films is remarkable, and every genre makes the list. And you can take your drinks into the film if you really want to get comfortable.
Welcome back. Glad to have you
back. Thank you. Glad to be back.
The UK has missed you.
Oh, thank you.
You can come and sort everything out.
I will.
There are loads of films have come out, though. God,
yes.
It's been bloody busy on the old film release calendar. Yeah. There's been a hell of a lot of, obviously, we heard awards contenders.
Yeah.
They have been and gone now. Well done, Moonlight.
Well done, Moonlight.
Very pleased with all that stuff. But there's been lots of blockbustery things have started to creep out.
Yeah.
We've had some more arthousey things. And we've had the odd one-off or kind of straight to DVD, but maybe with a couple of screens. Like, I saw a film the other night called Headshot, which only had a very, very limited release before coming out on DVD and Blu-ray.
I saw that the other day.
It was a very violent film.
It was a very violent film.
My one-line review is very,
very, very violent,
like,
film.
I don't know if it needed to be that violent.
No.
But I'm glad I watched it.
Yes, I am. It was fun.
This is the point where I guess we would do a top five, but I would quite like to mention number seven, if that's okay.
Five to one and seven, but we can do seven first.
Let's
if you'd
do
like.
Seven first.
Okay,
because
great.
That is kind of how it works. Seven is a film called Certain Women,
yes.
Which is directed by Kelly Reichardt, although I think it's actually Reichardt.
Is it?
Because I went to a Q&A with her and that's what she said.
She's the authority on how to pronounce her
she
name.
She would know. Yeah. I don't know if I really like her films. I really like Wendy and Lucy.
I find her films to be
always
fascinating.
I wasn't
regardless
so enamoured with
Meek's
Cutoff.
I feel the same way.
And I haven't seen Night Moves, although I heard mixed things.
I like Night Moves, but Yeah, it's a very interesting film. As I said, I think regardless of quality, she's a fascinating filmmaker, and I'm always interested to see her work.
Certain Women was a really welcome sort of return to Breitart for me after sort of missing Night Moves. I didn't really know too much about it, but there was enough like glowing reviews. I think I'd read Guy Lodge's really excellent review in Variety, and I think it got sort of 5 stars in The Guardian, all that stuff. And I was, okay, well, I better go and watch this. And she was in Picture Central anyway, doing a Q&A. I was like, well, I got to go and listen to Kelly talk. I'm sure she's got some good stories. Turns out she does. Certain Women is a very slow, very like kind of static in terms of how the camera is used, but very beautiful film shot in real locations in Montana, and it's all shot on 16mm film, so it all looks like lovely and grainy, and the colours are very vibrant, and it's kind of like I love Moonlight so much. I think Moonlight is wonderful, but Moonlight is very slick. It's like a very slick independent film. This is kind of like the opposite of Moonlight. Like Moonlight is very cutting edge now, I think, in terms of how to put together.
I agree.
And this is so old school. Like this feels like it could have been made in the 70s.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a very, and it's just a very quiet, very intimate story of, well, it's three stories, isn't it? It's three films.
Exactly.
Sort of very loosely interlinked. We have a Laura Dern story, we've got a Michelle Williams story, and then we've got the Kristen Stewart story with Lily Gladstone, who's a new actress.
Well, yes,
who
I mean,
wonderful.
I would even describe it as the Lily Gladstone story that Kristen Stewart also that she appears in.
I completely agree with that.
It's a film of great restraint, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's also a film in which, and this is certainly no criticism, not a lot happens in this film. It's all about those moments in life where things are not said, and those sort of quiet, painful stabs, and I find that to be utterly fascinating, and I was totally wrapped by it. I was just transfixed. I think she's done such a great job. It feels like there's total 100% emotional authenticity here. It just feels like real life.
All through kind of moments of silence as well. Like, I think the things that I really remember are just like the looks that people give each other, which I'm aware is maybe not something that sounds like it should sell tickets to a film, but like honestly, you have to experience it. And I just remember these amazing, really intimate, really real looks between certain people at certain key points in their life, in their stories. Because each story is kind of about at least one relationship, if not more.
Yes, and which sort of overlap throughout the film.
Which is done so well, it's handled so well. And also, like, I guess we're describing a film that maybe sounds quite slow and static, but it also zips along. Like, knowing that there are three of these stories that are, you know, whatever, connected however they are, I was just surprised when the first one finished. Like, right, moving on. All right, see you, Laura Dern.
Yes, exactly. And then we, you know, there are certain smaller beats later on, but yeah, it's very much a Game of Three Halves. I just thought it was absolutely wonderful. What a fascinating filmmaker she is.
Recommend this
film. Yes, and see it sooner rather than later.
So this is a film that had such a tiny opening, I guess. Sometimes these films do. They have a very sort of like slow start and then they slowly expand across the UK. So if it isn't in a cinema near you yet, it will be. I know for a fact that it will be a Picture House Cinema's Discover Tuesdays film on the 28th of March.
Okay.
And I know lots of cinemas, especially outside of London, where the cinemas maybe are smaller, that's where it will come to those cinemas. Just keep an eye out for it in the listings because it's a wonderful film to see on a big screen.
Oh, yeah,
that
absolutely.
16mm photography looks incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Big fan. So
huge recommend.
Huge recommend. And actually, number 7, considering how few cinemas this film opened on,
that's a good performance.
Really, real achievement, I think.
Yeah.
In at number 6, just so we don't miss it over, is Lion. If you haven't seen Lion,
oh yeah,
it's
I like Lion a lot.
Going strong. You gave a great review on the podcast a few weeks ago.
I cried.
I still haven't seen it.
Not during the review.
But I will. Should.
It's very good indeed.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah,
really number 5 is Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, which is a re-release of a concert film. I think it was his last performance, Ziggy Stardust, Bowie's last performance, which was a one night only sort of joint. But I think there may be some sort of DVD or Blu-ray coming out very soon.
Excellent.
Number 4 is Hidden Figures, which we watched together before we went to watch Resident Evil 6.
We did.
It was the perfect appetizer, I think.
It was a great, great double bill.
I loved Hidden Figures.
Yeah,
I
me too.
I recommend it.
It was very good. It was
highly enough.
It was significantly better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think it was going to be bad, but it absolutely topped my expectations. It's a cracking piece of work. Take your children and see it.
Please do, absolutely. This is going to be such a gift for like school screenings in years to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know actually at Picture House have got lots of school screens of the film coming up in the last term before summer holidays this year.
Good.
If you were a teacher, imagine watching this.
Thank
you. Finally, someone has made a film about my subject.
Yes, exactly.
And it's so much fun, and I think it's quite entertaining as well. So, you know, if kids, it won't be for like homework for maybe people who are watching
absolutely.
It at a school's thing.
Yeah.
It'll be fun, and yeah, I love this film so much.
Couldn't agree more.
In at number three is Viceroy's House, which I've not seen.
No, I've yet to see Viceroy's House, but
it's got Big Gillian in, old Gillian Anderson.
It has.
The old GA, yeah, and Hugh Bonneville.
And Bonners.
Looks like he's playing his character from Downton Abbey.
Yeah, he really does. He really does.
And in at number two, it's Logan.
Logan!
Which is the big new film, I guess.
Yes.
So this is the final Hugh Jackman Wolverine, or so the marketing tells us, and this is his ninth outing as Logan. Can you imagine playing that same character for that many films?
Yeah.
17 years he's been having a go on
Wolverine. God, 17 years. Nine times in 17 years.
Yeah, I guess sometimes, like, it's a slight exaggeration because in X-Men First Class, I don't know if you remember his scene, like,
I
took one word.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's like the best scene in the film.
Yeah.
And in the last X-Men film, X-Men Apocalypse, again, probably has the best scene in the film,
yeah.
But he doesn't really have any lines. So, like, the whole point is he's that very first early Weapon X kind of Wolverine. So what I love about the X-Men film is that there's no real kind of continuity between any of them.
No, it's a big old hodgepodge, isn't it?
I kind of like that, though. I think the other Marvel films, like the Avengers kind of storylines, they slavishly make everything link in. And I just sort of like how X-Men hasn't really bothered.
Yeah, they do sort of forget that with X-Men. They start again they sort of regenerate every few years.
Which I'm kind of fine with. That's kind of how comics work, don't they? Like, different artists come on board, timelines change, like, different people's chronologies change.
Yeah, I agree.
And I sort of like how cartoony the X-Men films feel. Saying that, I mean, this film is not cartoony in the traditional sense of the word. It's a 15 that plays like an 18.
It's
a very gritty,
extremely violent. I mean, we were talking about Headshot being very violent earlier on. This is an extremely violent film. And with a lot of, in fact, Hugh Jackman does a lot of huge action in this film.
Yeah, very physical on Hugh. Very few special effects or explosions, but huge, like, just in terms of like his own sort of stunt work and the fight scenes. Lots of hand-to-hand combat, lots of stabbing, and like brutal shots of blades going in someone and out the other side.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I did find it to be a touch repetitive. And I found the plot to be a little meandering, and a few of the supporting performances from your Stephen Merchants and your Richard E. Grants were a little underwhelming. So that it's not a perfect experience for me. I think Jackman is very good as ever as Logan, and I like the idea. I think it's a good concept. I think it's the Wolverine film that people have been wanting to see for a very long time. It's sort of, I think, what people will now be expecting from a Batman film, from like a Dark Knight Returns sort of way.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a huge appetite for that. I don't think it quite works in Logan for me. It sort of feels like, I don't know if you've ever seen The Walking Dead, it sort of feels like three episodes of The Walking Dead sellotaped together for me, which is a bit of a criticism. But he's very good, and I like the concept, and it's very flashy, and Christ, it's violent.
It's so violent.
My goodness.
But it's sort of, at the time, what I really liked about the film was how it was a bit like a play. Like, I think the best bits of it were the one-on-one, or the one-to-one character stuff with, like, Charles Xavier and Logan in the same room, and they're talking, because you get the sense that they are the only ones of the X-Men who have survived what has ever happened in the past. And also what I like is it doesn't really dwell on, you know, what happened since we last saw Wolverine. Why is everything like it is? It's there in the background, I think, if you want to look at it. There's some quite interesting stuff with, like, the GM crops and the when they go to the farm and you sort of see how things are being made. And but it's just them. And they are old men, and they are grumpy, and they don't really get on, but they love each other, really.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Step-to-One Son, but that's fine.
It's a bit like Step-to-One Son. God, I'd not thought of that. That is absolutely excellent.
And I just love those scenes where they were, also because they are such good actors. You know, Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman have been playing these characters so long, and they know each other so well. Like, they can really go at each other. And, yeah, I kind of admire admired it for that. I think it's a film I admired more than I enjoyed. But yeah. I'm glad it's been made, and it's refreshing, and it's kind of exciting that maybe, you know, superhero franchise films could also be, you know, kind of intimate on quite a big scale, but, you know, could be just like a, you know, a bit of a character study,
as well
as being full of lots of action. And the action is very good as well. I think the fight choreography is cracking. But I would definitely recommend going to see it, just because it's unlike anything we've ever seen. And maybe
it's a big one.
If you don't like superhero films, but you do like road movies or westerns,
or The Walking Dead,
like, for me, I kept thinking, I guess because it's that New Mexico kind of area, I kept thinking this feels a bit like Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And their characters on the fringe of society.
Yeah.
What I did like is it wasn't a post-apocalyptic film, even though the marketing and the trailer does look like that.
Yeah.
But he's just on the fringes of society, so he is living away from society. But his day job is a limo driver when we first see him, and he's does, like, he's driving frat parties, he's driving a prom night around, like, society exists.
He's had a personal apocalypse.
He's had a personal apocalypse. It's X-Men personal apocalypse. Logan Wolverine Origins. And yes, as a recommendation, it's very long. Also, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Gosh,
so
it's long.
Do allow some time for this fella. And then at number one, it's Moonlight, of course, because only last week it won all the Oscars, didn't it?
It did. Well done, Moonlight.
And that's been a huge for its box office. It had like a in terms of, you know, nerdy box office stats, I think it had a 44% increase in box office the week after it won the Oscar, which was maybe its like third or fourth
like
week
three,
of release. So, which is really nice. Like, that's what the Oscars are for, surely, for getting word of mouth out there.
Spotlight.
For these big films.
Not last year's winner, but I mean, like, putting a spotlight on.
And you could go home and watch Spotlight.
You could also
well.
Do that,
and
yeah. It's very good. Spotlight is also very good.
And there you go. That is the top seven at Picture House.
Hooray! A first for us on this podcast.
Yeah, come in, Alpalina. Bring you loud and clear. Ready to receive the new Picture Houses podcast? Cheers, mate.
I mean, thank God there's no more Oscar films coming out. Woo! God, it was exhausting, wasn't it?
It's tiring watching such worthy films.
What I like about March is every week in this particular March, this particular edition of March, there is a big blockbuster film, as well as lots of fun independent fare also. So we just had Logan, and well, coming up we've got Kong, Skull Island.
Yes.
After that we've got Beauty and the Beast, and then we've got Ghost in the Shell, the live-action version.
Yes.
And I kind of like that every week there is a blockbuster. You can tell studios have been eager to release these, but they've been waiting for Oscar to get out of the way.
Get out of the way, Oscar.
But in and amongst all of that stuff, we've got some really great foreign language and independent films, one of which I guess is maybe one of the more hyped French language films we've seen for a while, is Elle, which I guess has sort of been treading the same space as the awards films, because this film has won 58 awards or something crazy.
58?
It's been at every... pretty much every festival since its premiere in Cannes, every major festival.
It's
been racking up awards for Isabelle Huppert, who stars in this film, for Paul Verhoeven, who directed this film, for the writers, for the film as a whole, which is remarkable. So there's a lot of hype for this. I mean, it won 2 Golden Globes, I think. I think Isabelle Huppert won a Golden Globe, and the film also won a Golden Globe. It's been everywhere, which is amazing. Like, there's a lot of hype out there, and anticipation, hopefully, I think, for this.
And... my goodness, what a film. We've loved Paul Verhoeven for a very long time.
What a guy. Like, I love all of his films, even the not very good ones.
Yeah. He really is quite a director. And this film was the best film I saw last year.
Wow.
Easily. I loved it so much. Just as a quick... catch up for anyone that's not aware, you know, just like a brief synopsis. Elle is the story of a woman who is the head of a successful video game company who is raped, and she gets caught up in a game of cat and mouse as she is trying to track down the masked man who raped her. And it is an incredible piece of work. It is at times... terrifying and thrilling and complex and hilarious. It does 1,000 different things, and I honestly cannot recommend it enough. I mean, you probably don't need this film recommending to you because you were planning on seeing it already, but, you know, it stars one of the greatest living actors, and it's directed by one of the greatest living directors, and it's a fascinating piece of work. You were saying earlier on, it takes a bit of time to process in your brain, I think so. After you've seen it.
You know, sometimes you see, I see it quite a lot on social media, people have just seen a film and they'll post something, you know, like, this film was amazing, or whatever. I think L is kind of hard. I mean, I'm sure people do that also, but I think to actually really maybe write something or to sort of do the film justice, I do think you sort of need to go home and sleep on it.
Yeah.
Or I certainly did anyway. I've seen it twice now, and I think both times I've enjoyed it more the next day.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed watching it, but actually in terms of like putting my, being able to make some, you know, words out of my thoughts,
yeah.
I think I've needed to sleep on it because it's so complex and it's so, we just don't see films like this.
No.
I mean, I've been sort of saying it's quite grown up, which doesn't really do it justice. What does that mean? X-Men is... Well, Logan is a grown-up X-Men film.
Well, no, I know what you mean.
But it's because it's complicated, and there isn't really a traditional film structure in there. Like, it does have a three-act structure, but there's so much going on in that, and there's so many, like, sub-plots. So, like, I mean, the... finding out who the rapist is definitely the main thrust of the story, but there's also like a family drama with her son and his partner, and they have a child together, or do they have a child together, and the relationship, she's having an affair with someone at the same time, and the relationship with the person she's having the affair with, and the neighbours over the road, and this and this and this, and there's so much going on. I just admire it for, I mean, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes. I think it absolutely flies by. And it feels like the script must have been the size of a phone book.
Yeah.
There's so much going on.
It's very it's very dense. But what a thrill. It's quite melodramatic at times
as
well.
Which I think is good for the whole story, and also for levity when, you know...
It's much needed. I mean, goodness, there's a Christmas dinner scene that is just so funny, that totally blindsided me, you know, just... really had a whale with that. It's an astonishing piece of work.
I guess in terms of like tone, it's kind of what Verhoeven does, and maybe we don't appreciate it enough, but like even in things like RoboCop, you know, like, which is quite a violent action film, there's satire throughout.
Yeah, same
and
Starship
there's
Troopers
great
and...
moments of humour, and, and Starship Troopers, I guess, does that to like even more. Showgirls does it, but I don't think it's entirely intentional. It feels like Verhoeven is maybe riffing on some of his previous stuff, like Basic Instinct with this also.
Sure, sure.
And I mean, I don't know how conscious that is, or maybe it's just him as a creative person, but like, it does feel like he's sort of riffing on some of his past work.
I agree. I've just noticed that on IMDb it's listed as a comedy drama thriller.
What a great sandwich.
I mean, crikey. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I guess if like some sort of film listings app kind of gives you, if you're searching for comedy or whatever and an L pops up, like, know that there are moments of comedy in it, but if you are looking for something of like an Adam Sandler sort of
absolutely not chiefly that.
Maybe you'll be slightly disappointed with this one, and maybe there's something else you should watch. But
you shall see that from the opening scene.
Yes, absolutely. God, it's so startling as well. What a start to a film.
Yeah.
I can't recommend this film enough.
No, I mean, if it's not in my top five at the end of the year, it will have been an incredible year.
Yeah, what a good sign that would be.
Yeah, it really would be a great sign.
I think, Isabelle Huppert is someone who's done so many amazing films, but I do think that this is maybe her best performance.
Yeah.
I sort of say that with, like, caution, because I feel like
maybe
I've maybe forgotten something.
Maybe.
But,
God, I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it?
I guess you can't go wrong with Huppert, but for me, I've seen this film twice now, and I just think this is like the height of her powers. She gets to do everything she's good at in this film.
Yeah,
which is,
I agree,
incredible, and it feels like she completely owns it.
I totally agree. It's just I'm sort of lost for words a bit on Elle. I just think it's such an astonishing piece of work, and I think that everyone should see it.
Well, I really look forward to seeing.
Don't get
how
to say that very often.
No, it's just what a nice thing to hear. I look forward to seeing how this film opens. I think it's playing quite wide across the UK. Hopefully, you'll be able to see it wherever you are. But do take a chance on Elle, and hopefully, you know, like, have a look at some of the reviews. Hopefully, the reviews will sort of intrigue you and make you want to see more. The trailer, I think, is really wonderful as well. It's quite a tense trailer, and I think it does justice to the tone of the film.
Oh, it's been great. It's been a very, very good campaign.
Check it out. If you like seeing cats on screen, there's also a lovely cat in this film.
It's a very good cat.
If there was some sort of award for cats in films, I think it should win it.
Yeah.
That was one of the awards Elle did not win. It did not win Best Cat at the Oscars.
No.
A shame. A crying
shame. It's a real pity. It's a real pity. Excellent. Great first release. What else is out this week, Sam?
There's a few one-offs. I wanted to talk about a film called The Love Witch, which is coming out on a very limited release on the same day as Elle, on the 10th of March. but it's also having a big old Discover Tuesday show.
Oh, great!
The following week, which maybe is the 14th of March.
Okay,
let's say it's the 14th.
Sure, why not?
So you need to see it soon if you, if you want to see it on the big screen anyway.
I'm fascinated to see it. I'm yet to see it, but you've seen it, haven't you?
I've seen it. I got to also talk to the director of the
you
film.
You did.
Not wanting to show off or anything, well. But you can listen to that on a separate blog post. I'll put a link in here also, so you can
thank
just click
you.
A button. But the but she was super nice. It's Anna Biller is the director. As far as I'm aware, I think she's directed one other film before this called Viva, which was released maybe a little while ago, maybe like 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is really hard to get hold of, but a new DVD has just come out. I was trying to watch it before I did an interview and I couldn't find it. But in the week after I did the interview, not only has it come out on DVD and it's about £6, you can also watch it on Mubi. If you have a Mubi account, you can watch it for a whole month on Mubi,
being
March, in which we're talking about it. So The Love Witch is, I guess, the thing that you'll notice from looking at any of the marketing from The Love Witch are the really oversaturated Technicolor sort of 35mm style stuff. The film was all shot on 35mm, which is very rare, especially for
an independent
film these days.
Wow.
It's like...
Does it feel like it was?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the... I mean, it's one of the joys of the film. There's a great blog post that Anna Biller wrote, which I'll also link to, and there's lots of supporting documents.
Mm-hmm.
About just the challenges of shooting a low-budget independent film on 35mm. This film took 7 years to make.
Wow!
And Anna Biller, when you see the credit block, you know how sometimes in like student films you'll see the same name again and again and again?
It's
this is not a student film. This is a very like extravagant independent film where they used the money really, really well. Like, God knows what the film cost, but it looks like it cost probably double or triple that amount.
Wow!
Because Anna Biller, when I was talking to her, she said what she didn't have was money, but what she did have was time. So she spent 7 years doing the pre-production on this film, and she made all of the costumes herself by hand. She painted all of the sets herself. She made a lot of the props herself. There's one scene where there's a rug, which you won't notice because it's a rug in the background.
Sure.
But she went to great lengths to make that rug herself. And she was saying that was kind of due to slight procrastination on her part because she was not looking forward to maybe some of the more challenging aspects of the film for her in terms of her skill. But she was really confident at certain things and she sort of spent way too long on certain elements. But also waiting for finance to come in and stuff. And everything she did herself was something
process.
She didn't have to buy.
Yeah.
So she made a lot of things herself.
That's amazing. What an inspiration.
It's amazing. Also, especially when you see the costumes. Like, I mean, making costumes is no mean feat. But the costumes in this film in particular, again, look at the stills, but they're so extravagant and over the top.
Yeah.
So everything is very oversaturated. The lighting is extreme. And she was saying how, you know, to get the best out of her sets and props and things, the lighting had to be quite intense, especially for it to show up on 35mm. But it looks like if you've ever seen, you know, like a 60s exploitation film, like a Euro kind of trashy, pulpy thing. It looks like that. And this film looks like it could have been made in that era. Those films were a big influence to Anna Biller. And
did she edit it?
I think she did some editing also. She wrote half of the score. The other half is Ennio Morricone tracks. She got to a point where she said she couldn't. She just couldn't do anymore.
Yeah, of course.
But what she did write, because it's quite a musical film, there's lots of diegetic music in certain scenes. So they go to a tea room where there's a harpist. They go to a burlesque club where there's live music.
Yeah.
So she had to write the songs for those scenes before she could shoot them so the actors could lip sync and perform.
Learn them.
But when it got to the editing and the non-diegetic music, she got her Morricone record collection out, which again is fitting, I think, for the era
Fair
of which
enough.
The film evokes. It is a modern day film. A character has an iPhone.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look like it. It looks like it's in the '60s. All the costumes look very '60s-y. Also.
What a unique little thing.
I'd sort of compare it a bit to Twin Peaks in terms of the tone. Like there is a mystery element to it, but it sort of takes a backseat due to just the general weirdness of everything.
Mm.
But it's about so much. Like it's playing on these exploitation films. It's a very strong. Got a very strong feminist main character.
Yeah.
It's got there's a lot of stuff about sexual politics in there. The Love Witch, I guess it sort of implies it, but her main thing is that she can make people fall in love with her. And we learn why she's doing that. Maybe there's an event in her past which has started her on this path. I mean she's like a modern day witch, which is unusual to see.
Is it funny? Is it like knowingly funny or is it played totally straight?
It's semi-knowingly funny and I think it depends on the audience you watch it with.
Interesting.
Talking again to Annabella, she was saying how different audiences have had different reactions to the film. I think when people watch it on at home on their own, maybe they don't laugh so much. Definitely in that collective hive mind, people do find it funny because it is so heightened. And because, especially if you're a cine-literate audience, I guess you'll know what it's riffing on and why that thing is funny. It's also quite sad, which I don't think any of the publicity really has talked about.
Interesting.
Like, it feels like the main character has had quite a traumatic incident in her past. And when I also saw this film with a Q&A, and Annabella afterwards was sort of in tears when she was talking about some of the story elements. Because it is, the main character is quite complex. Similar, I guess, to Elle in a way, but in a completely different way. So yeah, it's kind of sad, it's kind of serious. Definitely fun in places. Like, some of the stuff is like knowingly pulpy, almost to the point of like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. I guess to criticise the film, it's too long. It's 2 hours. And I think this is a really good idea that could be explored also in a 90-minute runtime.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe if you spend 7 years on pre-production on something, you want to show everything on screen. I feel like maybe it could have been a little bit shorter. But I do recommend checking it out. I think it's definitely worth a watch and it's very unique. Definitely worth supporting.
I can't wait to see it.
You should check it out.
I will.
Why don't you check it out?
I bloody will.
If you've ever played the Tomb Raider, the like rebooted Tomb Raider games,
I have
on the like PS4 and Xbox, which I think are wonderful. I think both of them are great, Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
One of the actors in this film plays a character in Tomb Raider. Obviously, in Tomb Raider, it's not live action, but she did the motion capture and she did the voice acting.
Right.
So she plays Lara Croft's stepmom.
Okay.
Who's sort of an antagonist character in Rise of the Tomb Raider.
I was going to say, it can't be the first one. I've played the first one, not the second. That's interesting.
And because I was looking, after seeing the film, I did my homework. I was looking on Wikipedia and IMDb to see who's in it. Lots of new talent in this film, people you may not have seen in other things. But yeah, Laura Waddell is a British actress who's in this film. And she's in Tomb Raider. So, I don't know what's going on at the moment. There's lots of anime in cinemas, which is so rare.
There is.
We haven't really had this, as long as we've been doing this podcast, like maybe we've had like one Ghibli film a year, a Ghibli film.
Pretty much.
But we haven't had like a steady flow of anime, because I think it is it's a big export on DVD.
Yes.
Outside of Japan and certain territories, but it's not really unusual to go theatrical. And I think a couple of distributors have sort of emerged, maybe since Studio Ghibli have kind of stopped production. And they've been releasing, so far, have been really amazing films. We had Your Name last year, which I think we talked about on the podcast, which was amazing. Do check it out. It's still playing in some cinemas.
One of the best films I saw last year.
It opened in like November last year, and it's still playing in some cinemas.
Wow.
Especially in and around sort of London, the Prince Charles and the Odeon Panton Street, I think, have kept it on non-stop. Which is incredible. And I think this next film, A Silent Voice, is of a similar quality to Your Name.
Wow.
It's another original, a new anime. Or the other anime films, I guess, that we've had have been like re-releases of Akira and Ghost in the Shell.
Exactly.
Things that people may be more familiar with. But I like that we're getting these new titles, which I don't think we would have got a couple of years ago.
No, it's excellent.
Imagine not having watched Your Name.
So who's the distributor of A Silent Voice?
So it's a company called All the Anime. Who are a DVD company. If you look at their website, they do lots of DVD, and they're way more DVDs than films are being released theatrically, but they do choose films which they think maybe will hold up to a wide theatrical release.
What a great thing to branch out into for them, you know, theatrical distribution.
It's great. It's really smart as well, because you know, not every film will have the audience theatrically, and they know when something is, you know, like very specialist and will go on DVD, and they also know maybe when something will have wider appeal. And I think the success of Your Name is probably one of the reasons why A Silent Voice is coming in, because this is a very grown-up film. It deals with, like, when I was watching this film, I was thinking, this could be live action. Like, it's great that this has been rendered in animation. It looks wonderful. It's done in that anime style, which listeners may be familiar with. But it's a relationship drama, and it's a coming of age story. This story, and it's got so much more going on to it as well, which is great. Your Name is kind of like a sci-fi romance comedy hybrid, but this film is not sci-fi. This is set in a real world. There's nothing fantastic about it. Everything has been drawn to sort of be painstakingly accurate to whatever reference points they have in it. This is set over a number of years in a high school, and it's about a new girl who comes into this class. The class are quite tight, I guess they have grown up through the years and they get to know each other, and there's a kid in the class who's the most popular boy, but he's also awful. He's a dick. And he's popular because he picks on the unpopular kids. And it's that sort of character we've seen before. A new girl joins the school. She's deaf. It's the first time they've ever had a deaf student in their class. So the boy thinks it's funny to pick on her. And we start the film, it's a bit like the beginning of A Wonderful Life. The boy is now grown up and he's having regrets about how he treated this girl in school. And he's considering jumping off a bridge and committing suicide.
Oh, wow.
And instead of doing that, he actually decides to sort his life out and to make make amends for how he treated this girl at school. So he tracks her down. And as he's doing that, we see flashbacks of him in school with a girl, and we learn about their relationship. And when they finally meet, it's so complex because you see how she thought of him even when she was being bullied. And there's an underlying friendship there. And it's people reconciling with their past. It's not like, I mean, when I say he's grown up, he's in like university or something, so they're still quite young. But it's really interesting. And there's lots of, then they start to reconnect with other kids from the past and see what they still have in common. But I thought this film was really wonderful. I was so amazed by how grown up it was. I just didn't know, I mean, maybe that's my experience with anime, but if you think about the films I mentioned, like Akira, it's a sci-fi film, Ghost in the Shell, it's a sci-fi film, Your Name, huge fantastical elements. This is a coming-of-age story. And it's nice. I was very impressed by it. It deals with very adult themes.
That sounds terrific.
So it's directed by, again, there's people out there who are so much more experienced at this than me, but it's directed by a director called Naoko Yamada, and she has directed a couple of TV series, a TV series called K-On!, which is also a movie, and a couple of her movies, but I think this is her biggest film to date. This film, in terms of box office and success in its home territory in Japan, it was second to Your Name.
Right.
And it's
because Your Name was, you know, stratospheric success.
I say second to Your Name, like the void between Your Name and this, I can imagine, is huge. There are numbers with several zeros between them, but still huge, like kind of like phenomenally huge. But it's worth checking this one out.
Yeah, I absolutely will.
Was so what impressed a lovely concept. With it. Also, yeah, you don't see a film that often where the protagonist is deaf.
Yeah.
It's so unusual. And a lot of the film is about sign language. And also, this is adapted, like so many Japanese animations are, adapted from a manga comic book. And like, I guess on the page, it makes total sense. But actually in cinema, being able to, how they use sound is so important.
Yes, of course.
They, when you're seeing the film from the deaf character's point of view, it's all about the vibrations and the bass sounds,
right,
and what she can feel rather than what she can hear.
Yeah.
And I thought it was rendered so well. There's an amazing fireworks scene where she talks about how much she loves fireworks, because like that's the one of the things she can really feel in terms of sound. It's awesome. It also has lots of like anime tropes as well. Like it's maybe a little bit melodramatic in places, and which is kind of fun to watch also. Yeah. But it looks beautiful. It's like a mix of hand-drawn animation and like bits of CGI to enhance it on sort of backgrounds and 3D objects. But,
what a recommendation!
Yeah,
I can't wait to see this film.
So this film is only playing on the 15th of March.
Oh, okay.
So that lengthy review is irrelevant if you haven't seen it. But it will be out on DVD from All This Anime also. So yeah, check it out from the 15th of March.
Okay, good stuff, Sam. I think
we've well and truly caught up, and it's great to have you back in the country.
It's great to be back, Sam. Thank you very much indeed. I look forward to talking to you next week about other things
such as
Beauty and the Beast, Get Out, and
Kong. We're going to talk about Kong. We're going to do a double bill with Beauty and the Beast and Kong. You're going to watch Get Out. I've seen Get Out, but we should wait until you've seen it.
Yeah, otherwise, I will.
It will be literally a one-sided conversation.
I'll do a double bill.
And everything else in between. I'm sure there's more that we've completely forgotten about.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. Well, thank you very much for listening, listeners, and we will be back with reviews of those films and plenty more on the Picture House podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.